For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Again, fellow basement dwellers, this is your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you by thechairshot.com. Sorry, part of the Chairshot Radio Network on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Or something like that, like the tagline's there. You all know where to find us. We're easy to find, and you love us. You love us so much that you go over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot and invest in Chairshot shirts, or at least we'd like you to. And if you buy a Bandwagon Nerd shirt, remember, we will thank you publicly on these internet airwaves. I am joined with a smaller bandwagon, I'm back, by the way. I was gone last week. I was bowling for dollars, and I won $0. I said this on Hockey Talk when recording Hockey Talk, which, spoiler alert, you'll hear tomorrow, even though we recorded before we record Bandwagon Nerds, I pulled the curtain entirely back. $0. I finished 47th out of, I didn't finish last, but I certainly didn't finish first. And as Ricky Bobby would say, if you ain't first, you're last. So we'll live with that shame. Very much so. I wasn't going to win anyway. There was a dude who shot a 225 and then back-to-back 300 games.
You say the dude?
No, a dude.
Dude abides.
Oh, a dude. I thought the dude. The dude's a boy, so you can see my confusion.
I could. And the dude was not there. Maybe somebody got a white Russian or two. I don't know. But it wasn't me. I was too busy being sad at how poorly I bowled. I started off well, too. Like, I shot like a 211. Was like, all right, you know, I'm working on a new approach, new shot. So I thought I had something, and then it was all downhill. It's just all downhill. Sad for me. Anyway, we're not here to talk about it. I am joined by David Ungar, the lawyer. I am joined by Mr. Saturday Night, PC Tunney. You heard both. You've heard at least PC Tunney's voice. Dave may have been blown away at this point. I'm not sure if he's actually still here. This could just be a projected image. Are you a hologram?
I'm a facsimile. It's all
a
right.
A facsimile. Yeah. Is your house still rooted to the ground? You be heading to Oz and crushing a witch?
That would be a unique Sunday afternoon, that's for sure. But no, the house is still standing. The backyard, not so much. But I love DJ's response, Tunney. Is that good golfing weather? Not exactly.
No.
What if the wind is at your back? Then you get then, you win one of those long drive contests.
That's right. But then you've got to come back in the other way and hit a towering 100-yard driver.
So this will be really quick, but I have played up at Whistling Straits, and the last time I did, we played at the end of October because that's when we could go, and it was 44 degrees out, and there were 30-mile-an-hour winds, and one of the holes is directly uphill. It was directly into the wind. I usually drive the ball about 275, 280, give or take a little, and this ball went about 110 yards. It just kept climbing. It went even straight came down. Back a little. Came back a little bit on the way down.
I've played that hole on the game, Tony. I know what you're talking about. That's a bitch. I can't imagine doing that for real.
I have no frame of reference. I don't. I mean golf.
And that's about and all. That's, and that's your golf and weather together. Back to you, Patrick.
That's right.
All right. Thank you. We do have quite a show today. We are going to wrap up the first half of season two of Invincible. Episode four was a good one. Was a good one. It was a doozy. A lot of stuff happened. Big cliffhanger at the end of that episode. We're going to head into an interesting trailer park where I was torn on one of the trailers because I almost made it its own like topic of conversation after the second break. I instead left it in the trailer park, and we'll get to that there. And then we have some news. We're making our way to Oscar season, so there's not really like a ton coming. And once the Oscars come, maybe when are the Oscars? That's Tony, you were asking about a show. We got to do an Oscars show. Why, like, how do we not do an Oscars show? Like, we got to figure that out. We got to do it the Sunday before we would record it, though, because if we record it on the day of the Oscars, then our predictions would come after the Oscars have already taken place, and we look stupid.
So we need to do that for the March 4th episode that would air March 4th, because it is Sunday the 10th.
Okay, so
or we could do a, I don't want to take a mile. Never mind.
Yeah,
we could do a special and do it. Put it out Sunday morning.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's why I said never mind. Never mind. No. But yeah,
you're gonna do it at your little breakfast nook while you're sitting there.
I can. Doing your pancakes. Straight over there. Do you want me to go over there and record today?
I mean, that makes for some good ambient sound. I don't know if it'll make for great podcasting, but we'll have to see there. But yeah, so we do have a little bit of news. We're going to talk a sad loss in the entertainment industry that happened just recently, and a little bit of what you're watching. So not the heaviest of shows this week, though that is kind of typical of where we are in the entertainment calendar. But we do have a show. We do have a show to cover. We have a first half of season two to discuss. Invincible, gentlemen, you did a fine job, by the way, covering episode three so well that I skipped it because I didn't watch the episode until yesterday of episode three, and then I watched episode four. I was bowling. What? I was in a tournament. I was busy losing a bowling tournament. But I skipped your part. I skipped that part of the podcast, so I'm sure it was amazing.
I see.
That's why it was so good.
Yeah.
Oh no, I have quibbles with the podcast. By the way, putting trailers for the second seasons of shows you haven't seen yet, and then trying to talk about it and make up what you think happened on the show was a delight to me. As I was like, "Well, that's not right. Well, that's wrong. No, Dave." You guys clearly have never watched an episode of The Bad Batch.
We admitted that on the podcast.
So, you know,
we even said Patrick was here on three different occasions.
What do you care? Bowling is obviously more important to you anyway.
I make money if I'm successful at bowling. I don't make money when I'm successful at podcasting.
Talk to your best friend.
I've tried. That's like speaking to a wall. Like, we know that. Everybody knows that. Everybody hates Greg.
We love Greg.
No, we don't. Nobody likes Greg. Everybody hates Greg.
I love all you guys. All
right. Greg's too busy sending rock gifts to everybody right now. That's what he's going. There's your little wrestling tidbit for today. He's really all about the
so much. Right now. Can I just say this? It has been a glorious few weeks for wrestling podcasters lately. So
there's been plenty of content, a lot of content.
Yeah.
out there for you all to listen to and enjoy. All right, let's get into this last episode of season two, of the first half of season two of Invincible, because, you know, we leave episode three where Mark has jumped on this ship with his alien bug, who's like, we're in danger. There's asteroids coming to destroy our planet. He arrives at this planet. The insect is more and more elusive in the conversation as to what's actually going on. And he's like, all will be revealed when you reach, I think he called them the Alpha or something like
Taraxis,
that.
Or, I think.
Who cares? Nobody cares.
No one cares.
Is the bug. The bug planet. Bug planet, where he's like, you know, all will be revealed when we talk to, when you speak to like our Alpha or our Monarch or whatever they calls him. And of course, it's Omni-Man. It's Dad. There he is. And that's the cliffhanger, of course, that we are left with. And we spend the majority of episode four with Mark and his father, starting with some issues. We do get a look into the psyche of Omni-Man from the conclusion of season one when he flies off as to what he was going through, as he clearly was thoroughly confused as to what he was experiencing and feeling before randomly coming across a ship in danger and rescuing these bug people on this ship, doing some superhero shit. And apparently he likes him some insect, because he met himself. He got his antennas crossed a little bit with a lady insect. And the next thing you know, we have now not one Viltrumite spawn, but two, which Bark learns he now has a baby brother that is part of this insect species. And, you know, it's a very credit to Steven Yeun as he is playing Mark with all these different emotions that he's wrestling with. Like, he misses his dad, so he hugs him. He hates his dad for the way he talks about his mom and nearly destroying the planet. Yet he can't forgive his dad for what he's doing or what he's done. He also can't forgive his dad for moving on. Yet dad hasn't really moved on. He's still very angry and confused. It's just a lot of emotions going on. And we, through all of this, learn, though, that while the planet isn't in danger, Taraxis isn't in danger from some impending meteor swarm, it is in danger from the Viltrumites, because Omni-Man has broken their laws by reproducing with the natives of not just one, but two planets. And the Viltrumites will seek them out, determine whether or not those creatures are worthy of having Viltrumite blood, requiring them to either fight and join the Viltrumite cause after a successful victory in battle, or exterminating the weak, which is what Omni-Man feels will happen to Mark's half-brother, the little purple baby Bugspot. I just, was the baby hatched from an egg?
We don't know that.
We think it was, don't know.
These are the questions I have. And so that's the opening of the episode before we even get to the arrival of the Viltrumites. And, you know, and then there's Eve going through some shit. We got to get to that. Mark's mom makes a monumental decision. So, but let's start with Mark and his father. Dave, your thoughts on what you saw out of Mark and his father and this conflicted reunion.
At the beginning where they're hugging each other, I thought we were going to get a Christian Cage, Adam Copeland moment where they hug each other and he goes, go fuck yourself. You know, that would, we got close.
Look, Dave made a wrestling reference during the pop culture podcast.
It's a very,
welcome back,
a very complex relationship, obviously, for all the reasons you said. Mark is highly conflicted as to what he's supposed to be feeling. What am I supposed to feel? Am I supposed to hate this guy? He's my dad. I love this guy. And he's very reluctantly thrust into the middle of this whole thing. But you know, he's Mark at his core, and Mark at his core is a very good, very sensitive, caring individual. And he's got all this resentment towards, you hooked up with this bug. You know, mom's going through all this shit and yet you've moved on. And then he comes to realize that this brother of his is very innocent in this whole thing. And so you get to see that. So yeah, I don't know, man. It's a tough one, because he does miss his dad and he does love his father, and he hates his father at the same time for killing thousands of people, betraying his mom, betraying him. So I thought it's a very layered, nuanced sort of thing. I loved the relationship between them, because you do get to see all of Mark's emotions the whole time. And you get to see a side of Omni-Man that you realize that, okay, maybe he is not just this linear piece of shit that we all thought he was. He's got a lot of emotions. He's conflicted. He's, you know, flying aimlessly through the universe. And then, like you said, Patty rescues this ship of Taraxans who's about to crash into a sun. And then, you know, there he is. He's off and running. So, I mean, you kind of saw that, you know, that, you know, it's not the end of Mark and Omni-Man's relationship. And you got to see that. And then where it ends up at the end of this whole thing is very... The sins of the father.
We're going to get to that. We're saving that for the last. Right? We're saving that for last. Hold that thought. You did both your Dave things during the episode recap in one fell swoop. You got them both out of the way. You jumped way ahead and you'd made a wrestling reference. So there you go. You've hit your bullet points. Tunney, the father-son reunion. How did you react? I'm sorry, Dave. I love you. I do. I know you're experiencing a windstorm right now. You got other things on your mind.
I think Dave hit it on the head, and you see it right in the initial meeting between the two of them. Mark didn't know whether to go at him or hug him, and he hugged him. And as far as that goes, I think over this episode, which was an awesome episode, best episode of the season so far, not that any of them were bad, just this was my favorite one. He learned that no matter what he does, he's going to be connected to this problem that's going to follow him everywhere. So he needs to figure out what's the best usage of the tools around him to do what he think is right, because he doesn't want to kill. He learned that if he wants to be truly invincible, he needs to fight with the killer edge to him. Otherwise, he'll never be as strong as he possibly could be. So I think that was a few things we learned. Who's the other girl superpower that Adam Eve, right?
Yeah.
Eve, yeah.
Yeah, so she continues to struggle by, you know, she gets mad and fights with this dude all around the city, and these people look like they may end up dying because she couldn't save them because she kind of got caught off track there. So just a bunch of different things going on. Is there a separate series that's in there on Prime as well? Is that what that is? What prequel. Is that?
It's a prequel. It's episode. Like a prequel episode.
Oh, okay.
I did start watching it, and then this windstorm interrupted. I was going to say that for what you watching, but it's Eve's origin story. It's, about halfway through, it's really good. It does, when you watch that right after this episode, it will give you a bigger context of who she is and why she is.
Right. And her very conflicted relationship with her family, as she does, you know, that episode ends with her going home again.
And then the other thing that I think, outside of Mark and him learning all these things, not only about himself and his situation, but his mom cuts ties 100% and says, you know, I don't need the money. I don't want to feel like we feel like we owe you when we take that money. And I don't want to feel like that anymore. And then kind of the big connectivity would be, we see the books that end up being talked about. So we'll save that then. We'll save that then.
Right. So the dogs agree.
The books. The books are the key, apparently.
Yeah, the dogs read the books. And just a couple of other things that did happen out there. Obviously, there's some, you know, you talked about Eve. Eve is feeling really disconnected and lost right now, too. Like, that's the other thing I think is really important to pay attention to. Like, she was looking for Mark, can't find Mark because they've always had this bond. And for anybody who's read the comics, you know where those two eventually end up. But, like, she goes and she finds Amber. Oh yeah. Amber, you know, and Amber and the best friend. I forget the best friend's name.
We William? Did this last week, William, yeah.
Will. It's Will.
Yeah. 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 Amber and Will, they're like, oh no, he went off planet. Like, they knew where he was, but he didn't bother to tell Eve. And so there's, you know, kind of feeling left out, disconnected. She kind of takes all those emotions out on Arm Cannon. A couple of other little things that they threw into this episode before we get to the second half of what was going on in Thraxus and the big ending there. Like, you talked about Debbie telling Cecil, you know, I want nothing else to do with you, after having a conversation with Art. Art, of course, voiced by the great Mark Hamill, and saying no, you know, telling her that she's the one who really kept that family going, not the other way around. I thought that was really huge and really is what propelled her to step away.
And who's the guy with the glasses? Because he found
we're gonna
out
get to that. Donald. I'm about to talk about Donald.
I'm sorry.
Because there's two other little things. That's right. The dictator is back. He will tell you when to speak.
I just want to say, though, for people that don't know, when Patrick just said, oh, yeah, kind of out of nowhere, I was making the universal finger in hand hole for sex. And Patrick didn't even get mad at me. He just brushed, kept going right along and gave me a good, oh, yeah.
Yep. That is a thing that should happen if they follow the comics. Anyhow, the other two big things, because nothing's ever an accident in these episodes, right? And the first, you brought up Donald, who has been like, something's wrong here, because we saw Donald blow up in season one. And so why is Donald back? And so Donald starts being like, why am I back? And he actually sees the surveillance footage of him sacrificing himself to the point where he then goes and he stabs himself in the arm to see if he's like human. And at first he's relieved, but then he looks at the knife because he bleeds and his blood is red. But when he looks at the knife is bent at the tip. So he is not, like, he doesn't know who he is. That's going to be important. We just know it, right?
So, like, they want to give you the idea that he stabbed himself, and when the blade hit bone, it bent, right?
Or something bent, yeah.
Right.
Well, and I think the fact that you've got the Maulers back in this episode and the cloning going on.
That would be the other part of what I was going to talk about in a second.
I think they're related, though, because, I mean, it makes me think that Donald's a clone. And he's an enhanced clone or something like that.
Clone or an alien. The thing I love about the Maulers, by the way, is they just continue to tell the same story over and over and over again. They just, one kills the other, then makes a clone, thinks that they're the original clone, and then that clone kills him, and it's the circle of life. For like 30 seconds, I'm like, oh, King Mauler, we're going to finally like be able, no, we're not going to be able to solve the party again. We're back. The mystery will be back. It'll be fun. And you won't be able to take either Mahler at their word. Kevin Michael Richardson has kind of the best voice job in that he gets to be the voice of Mahler, because it seems like he will never die, ever, which is kind of the charm of the character, if you ask me. And those two, they're OGs. They've been here since like day one, and they just keep on replicating themselves until the end of time. All right. So then we get to the back half of the episode and what's going on in Thraxis. And sure enough, Omni-Man is like, look, the Viltrumite people are going to come. They're going to come for this planet. They're going to lay waste to it. They're going to kill they're going to kill your brother. And the only way to protect them is if the two of us fight together. And we can start by I can start by training you. Literally, he says that. And of course, three Viltrumites show up. And we get just an all-out slugfest battle. You have Mark not wanting to fight like a Viltrumite, not wanting to kill anybody, which is very costly. Omni-Man goes off and runs roughshod over two of the three that comes. He leaves one for dead with his guts spilled out while going after and fighting another one. And I'm not going to remember who is who or which is which. So forgive me. But we reach a point where Mark is in imminent danger of being killed. Omni-Man kills the guy that he has been battling, then turns around and rips it into half of a woman of the woman Viltrumite's face, kills her quite gorily. Just when you think it's safe, the dude whose guts he spilled out just decimates Omni-Man from behind, leaves him for dead while finally dying. Mark passes out. When he comes to, there is a Viltrumite ship taking Omni-Man onto it, while somebody remains and basically tells Mark that he has proven himself worthy of his Viltrumite blood, that they wish for him to continue to prepare Earth for their imminent arrival and invasion / takeover. And basically that if Mark doesn't do this, it will result in thousands upon thousands of lives being killed, as opposed to if Mark helps assimilate them more peacefully. And Mark is left at a crossroads on Thraxis, or what's left of Thraxis, as we end the first half of this season. Huge, huge developments to set up the second half of season two, which is very exciting.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. No, it's great. It's fun. I'm glad we waited to start watching this. I'm glad I didn't watch it already, because now I only have to wait 3 weeks to start watching it again.
A month. So that's
a little closer than it would have been if I'd have watched it right when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's interesting. I think Omni-Man, they wanted to make it sound like his back was broken there, I think.
Yeah.
And then Mark could have stopped all of this from happening if he would have just kept that killer instinct and taken the kill shot on Ponytail Blade Girl. Then they wouldn't have been surprised by Black Guts Hanging Out Guy, because, you know, white Bulging Eyeballs Guy was already dead. So I think we know their names. It's not a problem.
It's close enough. I think we've learned.
I'm on board.
We've learned that disembowelment is not fatal in the Invincible universe, because we've seen that a couple of weeks in a row now.
At least not right away.
Not immediately fatal. Yeah. Yeah. It's a hell of a cliffhanger when you get to the end and this guy is basically saying, you're going to take over your father's post. You are not going to abandon this thing like he did. He's going to be executed. And either you take a few lives or we take millions. And yeah, like you're saying, Mark's left at a crossroads as to what am I supposed to do here? And, you know, go back, subjugate the planet, my friends, everybody I love. And if I don't, yeah, who's going to stop these guys? So, but like Tunney's saying, Mark needs to develop that killer instinct. The problem is, if he develops that killer instinct, doesn't he start to go down the path of these alternate universes where he and his father have subjugated the entire universe? So Mark's in a no-win situation at this point.
That is the fate he's trying to avoid.
It is, but he keeps, it's inevitable, right? Almost there's an air of inevitability. And we talked about it earlier. He is continuously the father paying for the son paying for the sins of the father. You see that time and time again in this series. And here's the ultimate at the end of this thing. You now have to take his place or else. And yeah, that's, it's not good. Any way you look at it. So yeah, it's a tremendous episode. Great cliffhanger. Makes me wish that March 14th was here already so we could get back into it.
Well, it'll be here before you know it. It'll be very exciting. I have a question I need to go back and ask from episode 3. Because again, I didn't listen to what you guys said. I was one crushed that Optimus Prime betrayed Alan and is the Viltrumite mole.
Optimus Prime.
That's right. Peter Cullen is the voice of Thaddeus. He didn't even try to hide it. He didn't even try to pretend like it was any other voice. He used his Optimus Prime voice for Thaddeus.
It works for the character, though.
It does work.
But does Alan die that time? We're led to believe, but we don't see.
I think so. I think him apologizing for pulling the plug makes it that he's dead.
We queried the same thing last week, and I think the consensus was we thought he was dead that time. He did flatline out. After he turned off the machine and there's nobody to plug it back in. So it'd be great if he somehow survived, but I kind of think no. I'm with Tunney on this one. Hopefully I'm wrong again.
He's a fun character. He
was awesome. I don't want to be
especially wrong. especially after they like introduced his, you know, his partner and what's that?
I said I don't want to be wrong.
What about Donald having Cecil's password? That was kind of interesting, you know, because he's got high security clearance, and what else can he get into?
I want to see a strew of Donald clones, like at some point get released and they follow him out, and he's just been holding them for a while, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, we'll have to see, I suppose. It'll be very interesting to see how it all turns out.
How does Omni-Man get out of this one?
I don't know. Stay tuned to your same Amazon Prime channel.
His son will save him.
You got to figure.
I'm sure he will. Okay, so that's going to close the book. We got a couple weeks off from shows. Folks, we'll surprise you next week with what's going to happen because, frankly, I've sort of thought about what to do in this interim. I got a couple of ideas. I'm going to bounce them off the rest of this group before we make a decision. And so you'll know when we know, which will probably be next week. It'll be very exciting. But don't worry. We'll have something fun for you all to do. I'll float it. I got a thought. So we'll have to see. But we will give you that thought. What we are going to give you though is a commercial break because it is time to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to jump right into the trailer park because it is February trailer season, which means horror movie trailer season. Tunney's favorite time of year. We're going to listen to him speak joyfully about horror movie trailers when we come back. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This is your breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Got robbed of Kenny's voice, Tony.
What happened?
Kenny's voice cut out like halfway through the commercial for like 10 seconds.
Oh, that's because I accidentally muted my microphone and apparently that
killed it.
I could still hear it on my recording. So whatever. We love you, Kenny Killer.
I'm pretty sure these.
If only you posted the show.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the 27 listeners have heard Kenny before, so it's all right.
Yeah, it's the same commercial every week, folks. I bet you we get an ad.
Fix Patrick's password, damn it!
It's Greg's gimmick. I will say it's this, his gimmick now.
To Greg's credit, it's not for a lack of trying, guys. It really isn't. I wish I could say that it was like.
I don't care. I want results. Damn it!
All right. Well,
I'm done. I'm just kidding.
He's doing. He's got enough going on. So, all right, we are jumping into the trailer park. But before we do that, of course, we have to play some of that beautiful banjo, and it can't be PC Tunney. So, Dave, play that beautiful banjo. See, this is my faith that the recording is going to work on Dave's end, because Tunney could have played a banjo. I could have had Tunney play a banjo, but I am trusting that this is going to get done.
I can tell you that by the end of this show, you're either going to have Dave with internet and a soundbite full BWN, or you're going to have PC without soundbite and BWN.
You're going to have PC Tunney going publish.
Here's the funny thing is, if PC Tunney is without soundbite BWN, Patrick O'Dowd also records the show. Like, I still record it. I will have a recording of the show. I can transfer you a file. That's possible.
I'm saying I'm not editing anything if I have to post it. That's what I meant.
Tunney's version of editing is to hit the publish button. That's it.
I get you. Do you at least put the commercial breaks in the right spot? I hope.
I find dead spaces.
Well, you definitely have a dead space in the killer commercial. Spaces. You can start it, play the commercial, and resume it. It'd be great. Like, all right.
Sixth Sense. I see dead spaces.
Amateur podcasting 101. Make it sound as bad as possible. I don't know. Okay. While I'm on this topic, there are so many, what I would say, professional and reputable podcasts that I listen to that don't know how to do a fucking commercial break.
Well,
at all.
So,
like, whoever their producer is, or what, like, I'm talking like people with producers, like people who get paid to put these things in the right spot. And it's terrible.
No, and I hear it all the time on different podcasts. No, but when I'm recording and I'm playing sound and I go in to put the ad breaks in on our host site, I can see where my commercials are.
Right.
I get somebody else's audio. I can't read it like that, and I don't have time. So you get the best dead space I can find. And to be honest with you, sometimes it's better to get in the middle of a conversation and have people wait 30 seconds to come back to it. Sometimes it's not, but sometimes it is.
Podcasting 101 brought to you by the Chair Shot Radio Network.
I mean, kids, if somebody likes the structure of a show, like I give you the pause, like I give you the break. Like you could use this, and you could use that right there.
Oh, there's a difference between. I could do it. Yes, obviously. It's just not going to happen. You better hope Dave's power stays on. Let's just put it that way if you want banjo.
All right. Well, let's get into this trailer park. I'm just kidding. We actually only have two horror trailers today, but February is the land of horror movie trailers. February is the land of horror movie releases. These are titles that frankly couldn't be released during Halloween because they weren't good enough to bring in the box office of other horror titles. We got two. We're going to start with one that our good friend Ray Cash shared with us in the chat. And it's only a teaser. It's a 1 minute long teaser trailer for a movie called In a Violent Nature. And it's a slasher film. But what's unique about this slasher film, based on everything we've heard, is that it is told from the perspective of the murderer. And the trailer itself shows you next to nothing. It shows you a lake. It shows you a body floating up from the depths of said lake. And it shows you a creepy dude holding two hooks. And that's it. That's it. It's a teaser. When we get a full trailer, I think we'll probably talk about the full trailer because I want to see how the trailer is told. Like how the trailer is going to be used to tell the story of the movie. Because this isn't a perspective you typically see in horror. Like you don't see a slasher film told from the perspective of, you know, Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger necessarily. So, or Leatherface, like any of the great slashers. So I'm intrigued. I don't know that I'm intrigued enough to see the movie, but I think it is a unique idea on a popular genre. And I think that is worthy of taking a look. So we'll go to our resident horror movie fan, PC Tunney. Regardless, I know we all know how you feel. What do you think of the concept of this film?
No, it was a great teaser trailer, like to just go, hey, listen, we're going to put a few quotes from some reputable people that have seen this already, and give you some cool music and a couple of cut shots from different parts. I would imagine that the actual trailer doesn't give you much more either. It might just show you how they're going to use that perspective, because while I'm not the biggest horror fan, the general horror direction would be to follow the one being stalked, not the one doing the stalking, correct?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of this will be in that. I mean, I'd love to see a lot of it on the first person side, especially they said amazing kills, right? So like you're not going to be seeing it coming at you. You're going to be seeing that happening to somebody else, I think. And it should be interesting. It's one of those things in horror, though, to me, where if it adds so much suspense and is thrillerish and isn't just jump scares and darkness and devils, I kind of like that a little bit. So we'll see where this gets reviewed for me. I don't put it on the automatic no-fly zone.
Wow. That's a big deal, bandwagoners. Like, if Tunney is saying, I'm just saying, like, we know what it is that you tend to go for. This is definitely not something... Horror is not something you go for. You and DP made that very clear last week on the podcast as well. So, like that enough is almost enough for me to be like, you know what, I gotta watch it. Dave, what did you think of this teaser?
I mean, the fact that Tunney is not wiping his ass with it immediately is shocking.
Now I gotta watch this, and we're gonna review it. And yeah. I totally committed myself.
You've committed. You got to watch it in Square X or whatever the hell it's called, Storm X. Stormfront X, I don't know, 4X. The trailer was like, there's not a lot to it, but like you guys are saying, it is a entirely different concept. It's and I like the analogy you drew, Pat. It's like, yeah, let's look at the story from like the eyes of like Michael Myers, from the eyes of Jason Voorhees or you know, Son of Sam, Unabomber, anything like that, to see what makes, you know, what are they thinking, what are they feeling, what is their motivation. I mean, yeah, I don't know if any movie's really kind of done that. I mean, like Rob Zombie's kind of Halloween remake kind of came close-ish to that sort of thing. But I think it looks good. The critics seem to be really high on it, and it is a different sort of horror movie. So I'm interested. And if Tunney doesn't hate it, I'm doubly interested.
That is one way to look at it. So yeah, more to come on that. And like I said, I hope we get a trailer. Like, I hope we get a full-on trailer that does tell us a little bit more. Let's move into a movie that I don't think any of us are going to watch, and this is just going to be straight-up terrible. Like, I'm just going to say it. We got a trailer for a... No, this is... The reason I put this trailer in, because I just heard the listener be like, why the hell did you put this trailer in, and why are you going to talk about it if you think it's going to be terrible? Because this is the definition of horror movies in February that get released. Tarot. The trailer for this upcoming flick, Tarot, which is about a haunted deck of tarot cards, where it's just, here's the thing is, One, I'm just trying to figure out what, and I'm going to forget this guy's name, but the dude who plays Ned in the Spider-Man films, Peter Parker's best friend, he's in this movie. Like, I think that's him in this movie. Oh, this looks like a bunch of 20-somethings who go up in an attic, find something they shouldn't, and unleash unspeakable horrors. This time in the form of a tarot card deck where it appears that the different faces of the tarot cards come to life to murder you, because that's what they are, a bunch of murder bots that are going to destroy you. So, but when you look at February, in bad horror movie February, this is what gets released. And here's why these films get released at this time. Because it's such a dead time for films, you can release something like this. It's not an expensive movie to make. Horror films are universally known as inexpensive to make. And they make a lot of money for the budget that they cost to make. And so this movie will be bad. It will be reviewed poorly. It won't really get watched much at the box office. It'll still turn a profit. It will probably get tarot too. Tunney, I know you're not a fan of horror films, but find the line what I just said.
To your point, it made it onto this show right now. So right. There you go. Yeah, this is the kind of one that I was talking about when I said, you know, I'm not interested. It's basically just the same thing where instead of going A, B, C, D, E, F, G, they went A, B, C, D, E, G, F.
Yeah, I just flipped one of those letters around. So, Dave, you'll be at the theater seeing this in 4X, I know. Let us know.
I won't be seeing
it. Damn it. Screen X.
I won't be seeing it on X videos, let alone anything else, because this, no. I agree with Tony on this one. This is very formulaic. This is very paint-by-the-numbers-ish horror movie for this time of year. You know, haunted tarot. I mean, tarot cards are notoriously problematic. It's like another Ouija board movie or anything like that. So it's just like, all right, what are we doing here? We got the bad people from the tarot cards coming to life, terrorizing people, motion detectors and vans. And there's nothing to
it's
this
Ouija,
one. Yeah.
It's Ouija meets Jumanji meets tarot.
It is just like you're saying, Tony. It is just a very generic vanilla type of movie for this time of year. The special effects don't even look that good. So I'm like, all right, sure. For somebody else, maybe. But you're like you're saying, it won't cost a lot to make. It'll more than break even. It'll probably make a profit, which is more than you can say for like the Marvels or something like that. So, hey, what can you say, right?
Not much. This looks like a movie that'll make money. People will watch it. It'll be
a success because of that, right? I mean, honestly.
There's an audience out there, though, that believes in psychic readings and tarot cards and are horror fans. So there is a niche for it.
Oh, yeah. It's going to make its money. I just find it really, 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 really interesting that these always come out. Like, these consistently come out. They get put out here. They make their money. And then they'll be on a streaming service within 2 months. And that's where it'll get its second win. Like, it'll show up on like Max or something, and people watch it there too. So, all right, enough of that, because David's man crush is making like a million movies. All right, so he's got Argyle in the theaters right now.
Nothing else to
Cavill,
do, Pat. Jeez.
That's right. He's got nothing else to do. So Henry Cavill, out there in Argyle. I'm assuming it won the box office this week because nothing else was out. But we got a trailer for a film I was gonna skip. And it was like, but I kind of like this title, and it has Henry Cavill, and it's got Guy Ritchie tied to it. So let's check it out. It's a movie called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And this film is allegedly based on true events, inspired by true events. Looks like it is a special, it is supposed to be the story of the first special forces mission from the British Empire, led by a ragtag team of rule breakers led by one Henry Cavill, heading in to help fight the Nazis and prevent England from falling to the regime. I got a lot of Inglourious Bastard vibes out of this Quentin Tarantino's flick. I'm not sure how close or accurate it's going to be to whatever this story is based on. I have not done a lot of research, but I'm not going to lie, Cary Elwes and Henry Cavill having conversations about ungentlemanly warfare. It looked fun and interesting, you know, for a World War II flick. Dave, you go first this time. I've been making Tunney talk about all the horror movies. You talk about this. What did you think of your boy Henry Cavill? Yeah. Did you pop wood? Dude, did it get you excited?
Honestly, I wasn't sure it was him until I saw the credits. Like, oh, it is him. Okay, it kind of looked
like.
You
didn't like the beard? The beard was too much.
The beard and he looked a little.
He
looked a little slimmed down for this one. He wasn't, you know, as maxed out as he normally is. But yeah, so I'm disappointed. No,
everyone, you hear that? Dave likes him buff and clean shaven.
That's right.
So make sure you get yourself waxed up before you go hit on Big Daddy Dave.
And PC Tunney, buff and clean shaven. So yeah, exactly. this looks fun. I mean, it's kind of hard to throw a comedic take on the first SS mission, but I applaud them for trying. And I think from what I saw, it looks like a good movie. It looks like something that could be fun. The title is a little off-putting because it's so damn long. It's like
it's a very unwieldy title.
It is very difficult. It is a mouthful in the most, you know, non any kind of way sort of thing. So I mean,
it's very Guy Ritchie. Very Guy Ritchie. Yes. Like with the long title and the action sequences and. But like I said, am I off on the Inglourious Bastards sort of vibes, though?
No, it felt like that. Okay. I got
Tunney,
that same feeling.
Tunney, what did you think of this trailer, bro?
I loved it. I can't wait to watch this movie, to be honest with you. I got more of a The Kingsman meets Expendables set in the Nazi World War, whatever. But I mean, as far as Guy Ritchie, you know, Snatch, Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels are two of my favorite movies ever. So yeah, I'm totally in for this one. It looks clever. It looks fun. And there's a solid cast. So, you know, count me in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the cast itself. Yeah. I think looks really great. And it's going to be a good deal for all. I'm always like, I know you're a big Guy Ritchie fan. We talked about Guy Ritchie, couple episodes ago, I want to say
there was another movie we did a trailer. Yeah,
for a series. Yeah, he's got a series coming. So Guy Ritchie's also very, very, very busy guy. But I don't know. Yeah, it just looks fun. I don't know if it'll be a theater. I don't know if it'll be a theater stop for me. But it'll definitely be something that I check out. What will be a theater? Oh no, sorry, got ahead of myself. See, I pulled the Dave. I jumped to the end. Got to get to this one. Netflix put out a video where basically they were like, "Hey, here's all the shit we're giving you in 2024." And boy, are they giving us a lot of shit in 2024. The name of the video was called Next on Netflix. And I mean, you got glimpses of a ton of stuff off the top of my head. Second season of Squid Game, which, by the way, did you two ever check out Squid Game?
I watched the game show Squid Game.
You should watch the series Squid Game. It is a very, very good series. It is a thriller.
And I can't even say it. And I can't even say I've never watched a Japanese subtitled movie before either, because if you've never seen Midnight Diner.
You can watch them. It's okay. Squid Game is phenomenal. Very taut, tense thriller of a show. You get a glimpse of Arcane, Bridgerton, Avatar, The Last Airbender, which, by the way, you guys no idea about anything to do with one of the biggest animated series on television for 5 years,
which we admitted.
Thank God there wasn't a
Rebel Moon Part Two. Sorry,
you're going to be there for Rebel Moon Part Two, right, Pat? Opening night, you'll be there.
I'll watch it just so that DJ. I can hate on it.
Him and DJ will be eating popcorn, holding hands.
They'll be handcuffed with furry handcuffs.
You get a glimpse into that Pop Tart movie that's coming out,
dude. Yes, Jerry Seinfeld.
Unfrosted. Unfrosted. The Pop Tart Story is the name.
Oh, hell yeah! Can we review
Beverly
that?
Beverly Hills Cops. Axel F. It was just a ton of shit, like so much stuff that I couldn't really like. This is why this is the trailer, by the way, that almost was its own topic, because I almost wanted to be like, dissect this and break this down. Like what, like Jennifer Lopez is doing something.
That looks so opened, like the worst thing. Like, is it like Atlas or something?
Yeah, but it was like in there. So Dave, what did you glean from this monster other than Rebel Moon, which everybody's going to watch and hate because it's Zack Snyder. He's trash.
The finales of, I think, three series, and I don't remember the middle one, but Cobra Kai season 6, you know, we got the first
Cobra Kai,
little teeny glimpse of that. We got a little teeny glimpse of Umbrella Academy final season. And I forget the other show that's ending, but yeah, lots of things that are kind of debuting, and Netflix continues to just leverage themselves. I mean, we had about a year and a half ago, we kind of wrote them off, and we were wrong, because they have come back with a massive vengeance. You know, and that's just 2024, and we know what's coming in 2025 with them, at least on one front. So yeah, Netflix has a lot
you
of
can, you can talk about the wrestling thing in that regard.
Well, I don't blame them.
I'm just shaking your chin.
No, I don't blame them for not showing Raw coming in 2025. Right now is a good time to just kind of distance yourself from that and not touch that until you have to, even if it is a big get. But yeah, I mean, Netflix has got no shortage of tremendous stuff. I think I shared with Tunney, we got Full Swing coming back in a couple weeks. Very excited for golfers to see that whole dynamic. I can't wait for the Live PGA merger episode. That'll be a fly on the wall. Oh, we're going to cover that. So yeah, Netflix has got no shortage of just really quality stuff coming out on all fronts. And it's going to be an exciting year to be a Netflix subscriber.
Tony, anything catch your eye in that rapid fire trailer of information?
Back in Action, Jamie Foxx and Cameron Diaz. Looks like it could be an interesting movie.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Carry On looks like an interesting one. Taron Egerton, directed by Colette Sarah. I don't know that. That's a Jason Bateman one with the bomb. I have the list here in front of me. Damsel is also there. There's a Hitman movie. Some of the shows, Three Body Problem, I haven't checked out, but it looks great. It's about a young
trailer for that a couple weeks ago, right?
1960s. Yeah. Right.
That's the one with Benedict Wong, where we talked about how Wongers was kind of heavily teased as being more in that show than he might actually be.
American Primeval. But here's the thing. Black Doves is another one, I think, that was supposed to be really good. I thought for sure when I seen Cobra Kai, I'm like, oh, this is why it's in here. Patrick's like, boom, we got to get the Cobra Kai in there, which a lot of people are waiting for that. It's the last season, right? But I will go full O'Dowd, and I have a bone to pick with this trailer. We are getting this year another season of Somebody Feed Phil, and it did not make the trailer, and I am extremely disappointed. I'm heartbroken and just really hurt.
Well, there you have it, everybody. We're mostly happy. Tunney's got a bone to pick. He adjusted his glasses.
He'll be all right.
All right, now let's get to the trailer. I have to keep watching, like, The Little O'Dowd, very, very hyped for this next movie. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire released a full trailer in which the nostalgia was just on overdrive with this film, as we got so many Ghostbusters 1 characters in this trailer that I'm sure every fan, like, you want to bang. We got what's that name? What's his first name? Peck. What Peck's first name is? I can't ever remember what his first name is.
Elliot? Elliot Peck? Isn't
it? Yeah, who cares? Nobody cares.
It doesn't matter.
Peck's in there. Janine Melnitz is back. You know, Bill Murray's back. He's suited up. Dan Aykroyd's running around. Everybody just that you could want. Slimer is back. We got the miniature Stay Puft Marshmallows. They're back. Walter. It's Walter Peck. I do believe. Is the name?
Gunther.
Yeah, they changed it to Gunther. Gunther Peck.
Stop it. Stop it.
I got one. You each had one. Mom.
It's because you know where it goes. You know where it takes it. You know what it does. You little shit. Stir it all up. You were a GIF. You'd be that little dude stirring a cauldron up. Anyway. The trailer itself doesn't tell you anything particularly new about the movie. Like, it's still the same story. There's this ghost. It scares people to death. We might be in the danger of a new ice age, and only the Ghostbusters can stop it. There's a contraption that holds it. That seems to be a part of it. But I can't wait. I'm in. I'm excited. Dave, I'm sure, is in. Tunney. Are you who are you gonna call? Paul Rudd, by the way, doing the quote words from the song as lines. I shouldn't have popped for that, but I kind of did. Like, it was kind of dumb, but I laughed.
It's very Michael Keaton and the other guys quoting TLC throughout the movie. It works. Right. Ghostbusters has a winning formula, and the winning formula is the original is iconic, classic, blockbuster, and a cult following at the same time. If you can continue to get great talent in Hollywood, like Paul Rudd, to continue the story and come up with a script that's just not god-awful, which they haven't really. They've never really had a god-awful script for all these secondary Ghostbusters movies. And then you can continue to feed on the nostalgia, like you said, all the people that are in the movie. This will always make money. These movies will be made 20, 30 years from now, and someone else will pick it up after this, and Paul Rudd will be the old guy. So Ghostbusters is just iconic, timeless, classic, and winning formula.
Winning formula, indeed.
Slimer.
Slimer. I mean,
Slimer, yeah.
The librarian. They brought the librarian back.
There you go.
All right, go ahead.
Nah, this thing's great. And like you're saying, nostalgia heavy. Anybody who's still alive is in this movie. And they even reference Egon as, you know, these are his kids. So, you know, Harold Ramis gets a nod as well in here, even though he can't be with us. But yeah, it looks tremendous. It looks like a really good follow-up to Afterlife. Paul Rudd's fantastic. I love the kid who plays Mike from Stranger Things getting slimed, and he just sits there and nods and all. He says, yep. And that's how the trailer ends. But yeah, it looks a little, this trailer as opposed to the teaser, a little bit darker, you know, a little bit more serious in certain places when the nostalgia is not kicking you in the head, you know, that sort of thing. But it's, I agree with Tony. Ghostbusters has a really good formula. They know what works. It's the balancing of nostalgia and pushing this forward. That's the trick. And if they can do that as well as they did in Afterlife, then this will be very successful and the franchise has legs going forward. Absolutely.
So I do have one question. Tony said everybody's back. Not everybody's back. Will Dana Barrett ever return?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
In Frozen Empire. Will we see Sigourney Weaver in Frozen Empire?
That would be really cool, but I doubt it. I haven't heard anything about her being interested in any of this. Have you?
Rick Moranis?
Yeah, that would be fun too.
He's just now sort of back into acting off and on, just a very, very little
Moranis,
bit.
Moranis was the keymaster or the gatekeeper?
Yes. Does it matter? Yes.
He was
exactly.
He was the keymaster.
Okay, then they should have him at like some Ace True Value and he's making keys for them for their new building or something. And that's like the joke, right? Like he's a keymaster, but it's, you know, it's not the same, but he's, you know, or Sigourney Weaver is like letting him through the parking structure with the thing going up and down.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Those are the only two notable names though, like out of that core cast that haven't come back. So we'll have to see, and you will all see with us, because I'm going to see this in the theater. I know I'm going to see this in the theater. There's no way the Little O'Dowd's going to make me let me see this in the theater.
If it's in 3D, I'll go.
Why wouldn't it be in 3D?
I don't know. I'm just, well,
why are you so anti?
See?
It's okay. It's okay to have two dimensions.
CDCU.
All right. On that note, we're going to head out of the trailer park. We're going to take our second commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of news around the Nerdosphere. We got a little bit of casting news in the DC universe. We have
March 22nd, very soon.
We have the most unsurprising piece of possible news coming out of the Madam Web film. All of that and more when we come back. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the CHAIRSHOT Radio Network, part of the CHAIRSHOT.com. Bandwagon Nerds desperately wants you to buy a t-shirt from prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot. Because if you do, and you buy that Bandwagon Nerd shirt, not only will I not fuck up rolling into the Pro Wrestling Tees ad, but we'll thank you publicly on the show, and I'll do it correctly. I won't boo you. I won't mute you, because I'd be muting myself. I'm sorry. I'm not going to let a stranger on the show. PC Tunney will us. Like one of us buys our own shirt.
PC Tunney will personally show up at your house with a banjo.
No. Chris Platt is the one that shows up at your house
in a Platt Blast 2020 shirt.
Who's? Never mind. Go keep going. Hurry up before I say
that
something.
That was a little funny. Come on, that was a little funny.
That was good.
All right, let's talk about the most unsurprising news that we could probably expect to get. To say that the early returns on the upcoming Sony Spider-Verse film, Madam Web, are less than exciting, I think is a mild understatement. And sometimes an actor says a thing, it doesn't help. And that happened this week when Dakota Johnson, in an interview with Entertainment Weekly, was talking about the filming of the filming of the movie. And she talked about how she had never worked with blue screens for special effects before. And, I'm just going to read the quote. I've never really done a movie where you are on a blue screen and there's a fake explosion going off and someone's going, explosion! And you act like there's an explosion. Johnson said, that to me was absolutely psychotic. I was like, I don't know if this is going to be good at all. I hope that I did an okay job. But I trusted Clarkson, that would be the director, noting that she regularly checked in with the director throughout the shoot. She worked so hard and she has not taken her eyes off this movie since we started. Guys, true or not true, it's just not something you say in an interview about a movie that's coming out. Am I wrong here, Dave? Am I wrong?
Tell me you've never done a movie with special effects without saying you've never done a movie with special effects. Really, when you come out and say, I've never been in front of a blue screen, and you're talking about a movie that's clearly going to be heavily influenced by CGI, yeah. What in the literal fuck? I mean, I knew this movie was going to be bad. I think we all suspected it. Pat, I still applaud you for trying to hold out hope when we reviewed that trailer a couple months ago, saying, we don't know for sure it's going to suck. I think we've removed most of that doubt now after listening to her, because it's like inexperienced on a blue screen, and this movie's got to clearly have a lot of that going on. Oh, man, not a good look at all.
Yeah. Tony, follow up.
When you put this in for the synopsis this week, I went back and watched the trailer, and that's what it looks like.
Oh,
exactly what she said. And I give Patrick shit sometimes for calling himself out on the show, just in a fun, joking way. You know, we like to, you know, have our fun personality interactions, and I think we do a good job, and that's why this show is so good. But in this scenario, this is not a case where you call yourself out. You just let other people figure it out. And she basically broke the glass for you. You know what I mean? And once that glass is broken, you can't put it back together.
Right. It just, regardless of how you felt about doing the performance and your discomfort, because it's a very real thing, right? To be like, I'm not used to this. I'm uncomfortable with it. It just seems very strange to be. And this happens all the time. Actors say things in their interviews just like and sometimes it's stuff like this. Sometimes it's spoilers. Like what is it? Mark Ruffalo and Tom Holland like aren't allowed to do interviews without babysitters for Marvel stuff because they always give out spoilers. Go ahead, Tony. I cut you off.
No, you didn't. I was done, but I thought of a really good comparison of what this equates to is who is the, is it Carissa Thompson, who was a sideline reporter, and now she's a studio host that said when she was sideline reporting, sometimes she didn't have time to talk to the coaches, so she'd make something up that is pretty.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And like she didn't have to say that. No one needed to know, right? And she did anyway, and then she made that just look that much worse. I think in comparison, this is what we're talking about here. Just shut the fuck up.
Right, yeah. And I'm sure her publicist has talked to her about it now at this point, because that's usually where that's going to go. I tried to you talked about me defending or at least trying to defend the Madam Web trailer. You know, yeah, I don't know that it's not even that even when I defended it, it's not like I defended it that hard. It's not like I was like, oh, this is going to be good cinema.
No, you just.
But I did. I did want us to be like, let's wait before we declare it the worst thing of all time. And then an actor says, I don't know if this is going to be any good. and I really, I really didn't feel comfortable acting in front of nothing. Man, we're gonna have a bad time, guys. Like, we're gonna have a bad time.
I don't plan on watching.
No, I. It's gonna.
I never watched Morbius, so no, like, I can.
It's gonna be like, is anybody planning to watch Kraven? I'm not. I don't care how good the trailers look, and they haven't looked good. But it's just, they just don't do it right. Sony doesn't do any of this stuff right in there, and they feel like really flimsy, obvious cash grabs that aren't grabbing anything other than negative reviews.
Right. This goes actually kind of back to our conversation 2 weeks ago when we were talking about intellectual properties and trademarks and keeping things going. Like, that's, at the end of the day, this has always been very, very clear with Sony with regards to Spider-Man and the character. And it's always been about Sony's interest in keeping that IP, because they do recognize that there is monetary value in that intellectual property. And so doing everything they can to continue to produce content, and Tunney knows all about finding good, wanting to put out content. Good would be important. Sony does not seem to think that through very well, at least on the live action side, because we can't deny that they can't put out a good Spider-Man product, because they're doing it with Miles Morales and the animated features, the Spider-Verse features. Like, they can do it. But when they're not using Spider-Man because they can't, and yet they're continuing to try to make tangential Spider-Man movies, like, and I don't know, does the problem go away if we put in Miles Morales? Like, I don't know. Because I don't know that you trust that they can tell a good story.
Yeah,
because their last Spider-Man outputs were bad. Like, Amazing Spider-Man 2 is not a good movie.
Right.
And it's not Andrew Garfield's fault. It's just not a good movie.
Right, and that's why I was going to say, I want to say, it would really depend on who they cast for Miles Morales, but then you just brought me back to reality that Andrew Garfield wasn't the problem with those movies. It was the fact that they sucked, and that they tried to tell stories that don't fit the narrative. You know, let's wedge the death of Gwen Stacy in the middle of this movie about Electro. Why? What the fuck are we doing here? And you know, you can't do that. So while I think if they got the right person in the role, yes, that would help. But unless you learn how to tell a proper Spider-Man story in a live action sequence, really, what are we doing?
It's more about them finding someone to run that, like a Feige or a Gunn or someone that like they would be better off to call Patrick O'Dowd and ask him to relinquish his responsibilities that he has right now of mentoring America's future. And move into the role of being Spider-Man master. And I think he could do a better job than the rest of the idiots at Sony, to be honest with you. But that's what they need, is someone like that. Maybe not necessarily one Patrick O'Dowd, but you know what I mean.
Tony, are you saying we're America's future and Patrick is mentoring? Oh, you mean the kids. Never mind. I got
the
it.
The kids.
I mean, I believe the children are our future. Treat them well.
We are the future.
I know my wife watched that. I don't know if you guys watched.
I did.
I haven't watched it yet.
Watch it. We can have a segment on it on this show, or you guys could save it and do a whole musical chairs episode on it. It's really good.
About that.
That's summer talk, man. That's summer talk. Let's head into content. I know. I'm always looking for content. Let's go over to the DC universe. We got a confirmed from the man himself, James Gunn, casting news. We have found our Supergirl. And it is a familiar face to at least one PC Tunny, because House of Dragons, Millie Alcock has been cast to play Supergirl. She is playing Rhaenyra Targaryen, whatever her name is, on House of Dragon.
Show on TV, no big deal.
Patrick won't watch it. You know that, Tunny.
She'll be in Gunn's Superman Legacy, which is scheduled for release in 2025, before starring in her own movie, Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. Okay, I know nothing about this woman as an actress, so I'm going to have to turn to the two of you to talk to me about this. So I have not watched House of Dragon. I've heard good things. Yes, I have. I've just prioritized other shows over her. And I want to hear about her as an actress before we talk about some of the other names that were tossed around to possibly be cast in this role. So, Dave, to you, my friend.
Yeah, and Tony, jump in here because I know you and I have watched House of the Dragon. Casting is so important for what James Gunn is doing. I love this call. I think she's excellent. She was great as the young Rhaenyra. Now he's got me doing it, Tony. I can't pronounce it either. But she was excellent as that younger before they make the time jump. And I think she's perfect for this role because she's a tremendous actor. She's very young. She's going to grow into this role as they go along. So she can grow with the DCU as it kind of matures and gets older. I think I've seen some mock-ups of her, Tony. I don't know if you saw some of these pictures of her in the Supergirl outfit with the blonde hair. She looks the part. She really looks good in this. I think she's got everything that you need to deliver on a performance that I think Gunn is looking for. You know, with Gunn, you wonder, okay, how much of the comedic element is going to be brought in? Clearly, the role in House of the Dragon, there weren't that many comedic moments for her. I mean, the first few episodes, some, but as we got more serious, they kind of went away, and then they did the time jump, and she's gone. But I really like the casting. I think it's an excellent role. I think she's really going to excel in this and can add a lot to the Supergirl character. And I do, I like the fact that her age is something where she's going to be able to grow with this role. Because if you're going to take 8 to 10 years to tell this universe, you want somebody who's going to be able to grow and mature with the role as the story unfolds. So I love the casting, Tony.
Everything Dave said, and my one thing I'll add to it is this is a young actress who, where in casting a Supergirl or a Superman, you need someone that brings presence, and she brings it in spades. And you have literal proof from another outside of reality universe in House of the Dragon. And you also bring along a bit of a fandom as well, you know, when you do that, a little crossover, and that it might not be huge, but it's something. You always take something, especially nowadays. So I think she succeeds in this immensely, just because of what I've seen from her in House of the Dragon. I mean, she carries herself in a way, and I think these words will ring hollow once you end up seeing her portray this character.
Dave, just to kind of piggyback off what you're asking in terms of comedic, I'm going to, from James Gunn's own words in his description,
I don't think
Gunn and Safran, what's that?
It's not going to be very comedic at all, is it?
So, when first announcing that Supergirl was part of Gunn and Safran's new vision for DC, the pair cited Tom King comics and explained how this version of the character is different from others we've seen on screen. Superman was sent to Earth and he was raised by incredibly loving parents, whereas Carol was in a piece of Krypton that drifted away from the planet and lived there for the first 14 years of her life, Gunn said. It was a horrible situation where she watched everybody around her die, and so she's a much harsher and more fucked up Supergirl.
In that respect, she's even better for the role.
Yes. Yeah, the way she played the Targaryen.
Yes.
God, dear James Gunn.
Oh, boy.
I appreciate the... No. Hear me out.
You sure?
Right. I'm okay with you going with a dark character. Please learn from the sins of previous DC films. I'm begging you. And I'm not saying you can't have a character that's dark and fucked up and challenged and tragic. And I do believe the Gunn can do this right. If you want, we got another bleak DC character, though, for fuck's sakes, man. This is what kills DC.
I think you're going to get cold justice here.
Maybe. I hope so. I just don't want them to fall into the trap that DC has consistently fallen into since 1989
Dave and I are unbelievably familiar with that, and we just have to put our hopes and thoughts into this. But I think that you allow for the most character growth throughout her arc of what you're going to tell the story using her.
Sure.
Gunn needs to draw.
I'm not trying to pick a fight here, fellas.
Podcasting. We're having fun.
Gunn needs to draw a balance between what you just described and the CW Supergirl, because those are the two extremes. And if he can find something in the middle of that, she's perfect for this role. And that's compelling storytelling.
Because the CW Supergirl is like all American.
She's Americana all the way. And she's over the top in the other direction as far as being overly optimistic to a fault. you know, and I mean, it vacillates some places, but you want to see something in that, like everything you're telling me, Pat, she's drifting around in space, everyone around her dies, and, you know, it makes her a hard, possibly cynical, and she's going to come to Earth and see her cousin, Kal-El, worshipped by the entire fucking planet. That's not going to go over so well.
I think that this character is the one thing James Cameron took, or James Gunn. I apologize. I caught myself. James Gunn
will go on.
Took from Black Adam, and the portrayal there was excellent, and that hard, cold, you know, character.
You mean The Flash, not Black Adam. Supergirl wasn't in Black Adam.
The Flash, I'm sorry.
With
it's amazing. I mean, they all blend together. The Flash was so bad, I would have put her. I would have put her in a different movie.
My bad.
There was no Supergirl in Black Adam. There was just The Rock, not getting beat in a fight at all.
But it's just, there's so much going through my head right now. Sports entertainment, Chair Shot Radio That's Network. Fair.
I mean, the other names that Al Cocker allegedly beat out, this is all rumored innuendo. Lock and Keys actress Amelia Jones, while we hated the show, not really her fault. And Supergirl voice actress Meg Donnelly was the other one. I will say this. It's funny to me how many people were very much more interesting in how you could recast Meg Donnelly in the DC universe, but not a lot of stuff out there about, well, what can we do with Amelia Jones? I don't know what that means about Amelia. I thought she was a fine actress. I thought, much like one of the other shows that we ragged on, it's kind of hard to get behind a show that's that poorly written, at least in season 3. Am I right, Tony?
Yeah, season 3 can be a ball buster.
It really was. It was really, really bad. So we're seeing the DC vision of James Gunn and Peter Safran take shape here. Love these casting news reports. Can't wait to see what's next in store. And we'll just have to wait with the rest of you. All right.
Definitely like to see Amelia Jones somewhere in the DC.
Who knows? There's plenty of roles out there that can be cast, and we don't know what movies are coming next. So we'll just wait and see. All right. It'll be good. I'm excited.
We only know Netflix.
Right. We have one frame of reference. All right. Let's move on.
Shut up, Happy. Don't feel bad about me. I got my hand back, see? We've only just begun to live, white lace and promises, a kiss for luck and we're on our way.
That's right. This week, we also learned of the sudden sad passing of Carl Weathers at the age of 76. His family reported that he passed away peacefully in his sleep on Thursday, February 1st. It was funny. I was like, oh, man, what role do I first think of when I think of Carl Weathers? And it's crazy to think that there are four that immediately have impacted me in some way, shape, or form in films I've watched, because you've got Chubbs Peterson from Happy Gilmore that you just heard, Apollo Creed from the Rocky franchise. You have Greef Karga from most recently in The Mandalorian, and Dylan from Predator. And I'm like, okay, I want to watch one of these films. And I was like, I love Predator, which has given us one of the greatest memes of all time, the two hands clasping and the muscles flexing. So I jump on my streaming search service to see where Predator is streaming, Amazon to rent or buy. And I went, welp, welp, welp. But that does not change the fact I happen to own Happy Gilmore. So that is a fine second place. The price was wrong, bitch. You remember that alligator that took your hand? I got his head. Good stuff. Also totally worth watching. But also kind of sad, sudden. I loved the character he played in Mandalorian. He was a wonderful character. It'll be sad to see him written out of the movie, because I don't think they've started filming the filming the film yet, but you know Gert Karger was going to be a part of that movie in some way, shape, or form. So it'll be sad to see that we won't have that opportunity to kind of say goodbye in that way. But a hell of an actor, not bad for a guy who was a football player who said, let me give this a try, and got to be, you know, a Muhammad Ali sort of character taking on Rocky Balboa before, you know, being an action star. He's Action Jackson. I think he was Action Jackson. I think that was his character. He was just so great. He was always great in the roles that he played. And sad day to lose Carl Weathers. And so let's take a moment, gentlemen. Tell us a little bit something you love about Carl Weathers, whether it's a role, where you think of him most, anything like that. We'll start with that. We'll start with Dave, because Dave, you know, Dave watched Rocky in the theater on premiere night. What a bet.
Rocky II for sure. I don't know about the first one, but yeah, Carl Weathers,
the Italian chicken.
Yeah, the Italian chicken. He'll always be Apollo Creed to me more than anything else. And Rocky does not work without Apollo Creed. And I mean, you don't get that. You're absolutely right, Pat. The Muhammad Ali, Apollo Creed is Muhammad Ali, you know,
yes, that's every way based on,
and to have somebody that with that much charisma, that much confidence, overconfident to a fault in the first movie and the second one as well, because he just thinks that Rocky's a chump who has no business being in the ring with him. But the way that series then transitions from after Rocky beats him to become Rocky's trainer to help him get over the hump up to his unfortunate demise in Rocky IV, he'll always be Apollo Creed to me. And I always looked at him that way. And then, yeah, Chubbs comes along and you see this other side of Carl Weathers, that this big golfing pro who is just hilarious in that movie. The guy was, I dare say, very underrated as an actor, I would say, you know, because we all love, we knew him, we love him, but I don't know if he gets the same recognition as somebody like a Sly or something like that. And he should. So yeah, it's a big loss, and rest in power, Carl. He's one of my favorites. I was really sad to see him.
Donnie.
I think the amount of love shown by his peers that he's worked with and been surrounded by throughout his excellent career, and it is a testament to who he was and how talented he was. You never heard a bad word about him. And Dave's right. Like, he is so underratedly integral to Rocky. Like, it doesn't work with maybe one other two people on the planet. And we don't even know who those people were at the time that could have done this. Definitely he is Muhammad Ali. It was based off of Ali's fight against, can't remember the white boxer's name.
Or no, is it Corey? Was it Wepner or Corey?
No, it wasn't Corey. It was Wepner, I thought. Yeah, Wepner. I'm not sure. But yeah, just, and then the great job he did on The Mandalorian. That's the one I couldn't remember when you said four, Patrick. I remembered Predator. I remembered Rocky. I remembered Happy Gilmore. And I just, he seamlessly eliminated all those personas from our minds and was a character in The Mandalorian that we bought into again. Like, his ability to suspend your disbelief of him diving into another character is, it could be unmatched when you talk about those four characters. It's amazing. It covers such a broad scope as an actor.
He was just, sorry, I'm sitting there and all I'm thinking of are one-liners from Happy Gilmore at this point. You know, they wouldn't let me play on the floor tour anymore. Oh, I'm sorry, because you were black? No. Damn alligator, bit my hand off. Oh, my God. I actually have a posed photo with Chubb Peterson's hand that Chubb Peterson's prop hand was passed around from subway to subway, and you could photo op with it at the different subway stops of eight, and it was at my local subway. So I have a photo somewhere of me shaking Chubb Peterson's hand. Happy Gilmore, by the way, available on Peacock if you want to check out that fine piece of comedy. Let's see, where to stream everywhere. Let's see if Rocky is streaming anywhere. It is streaming on Max.
Yeah, they've been showing all the
stream
Rocky
it stuff on Max. But most importantly, Action Jackson, not free to stream anywhere.
Damn it.
$3.99 though to rent. Yeah, I mean, just said some, by the way, great 80s schlock from Carl Weathers. But regardless, yeah, Hollywood lost a good one. Sad to see that he went down that, you know, like, I was glad to hear that it was something that, like, wasn't prolonged and tragic. So many of these actors that we've been hearing about lately, you know, battling illness, cancer, horrible things like this, you know, he passed away peacefully in his sleep. And, So, you know, we'll sad that he's gone. The world is a little less for it. Raise your glasses. Happy trails, Carl Weathers.
Remember, kids, you can't putt when you're angry.
It's true. And it's all in the hips. It's all in the hips.
Honey's like, I'm angry. Angry all the time.
Yeah. I'm angry the whole fucking round, Dave.
Anyway, let's head into our final segment of the day, and that is what you watching. Dave, what you watching?
Nothing. I'm watching my computer screen. That's all I get to watch most of the time because it's all about work.
Bad for you.
It is bad for me. It is. Like I said, I am watching that Adam Eve prequel for Invincible. That's really good and very interesting.
Fire up Peacock and watch Happy Gilmore tonight. That's what you should do.
Yeah. You know what? You are absolutely right. So not a bad idea, man.
Sorry, I got to go back to this. One more thing. If you haven't watched Stallone's video talking about Carl Weathers, go watch Stallone's video about Carl Weathers. That
one thing I was going to say, it is cool that they reconciled, because I know they did have a bit of a falling out with Rocky Balboa, because somehow he wanted to be, even though Apollo's dead, it's like, wait, how are we going to get you in this movie?
And he's gonna be Chubbs Peterson from Heaven.
That might have worked, but I'm glad to see that Sly and him got reconciled. And Sly's message was, that was heartbreaking. A great tribute to his friend.
True. So Dave's not watching anything. Tony, what are you watching, buddy?
I got a trifecta for you, and I'm gonna cover three different genres. All right. I put in the chat last night. Yesterday, I watched The Hill. A great movie with Dennis Quaid. It's about, he plays a pastor with a son who has spinal problems and needs to wear leg braces. And throughout all this, young Ricky Hill finds his way to the minor leagues and in his pursuit to become a baseball player. And it's really a great family story and a story of faith, regardless of what your faith is. It's just a really good watch. So that's something to check out. The other thing is Netflix first ever live series. Is it Yoon or Yen? Steven Yoon or Yen?
I've always pronounced it Yen, but I've been wrong before, so
I'm not sure. But Steven and Rashida Jones are the first ever guests, and there's already two episodes out. It's live every Tuesday on Netflix. It's their first ever live broadcast show, and they're looking to do more of it. Dinner Time. Live with David Chang, and it's excellent. It's like an hour of him having two guests. The second week is Eliza Scherzinger and the ball guy from the league. I can't remember his name. And it's just fun. It's a fun hour, whether you tune in live or not, and you're a fan of food shows. It's really good. David Chang is awesome. Breakfast, Lunch, and Dinner is excellent on Netflix if you've never seen that, and there's some other things as well. And lastly, I have been playing Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, as has DPP, and I was hoping he'd be here, and maybe the next time he's here, he'll give you a better synopsis of what it is, definitely, than I can. As someone who doesn't play these games a lot, I am enjoying the hell out of it. The beginning is like an intro to the characters. There's four of them. There's King Shark, there's Boomerang, there's Harley, and there's Deadshot. And initially, they switch characters, and you have to get each of them to a specific spot. And then you learn how to play the game and acquiring different things. And then eventually you start your storyline, which starts at the Batman Museum, and Batman's gone rogue. And so has the rest of the Justice League, except for Flash, my guy, which I love. And the best thing about it for me is I believe you can play multiplayer and invite someone in on the multiplayer parts. Or if you need to, in different scenarios where you're trying to solve a puzzle or get move on forward, you switch characters whenever you want out of the four of them, which is really, really, really fun. Not to mention the cutscenes look amazing, and there's some good storyline going on and comedy in there as well. So anything bad that was said about this game, I don't get it. I've enjoyed the hell out of it, and I know DPP has as well. That's what I'm watching and playing. I'm sorry I took a little too much time.
Yeah, a lot of people, reviews have been rough on that, at least initially. So, you know, good to hear an opinion from somebody who's actually played the game. I watched, binge-watched very, very quickly all five episodes of Masters of the Universe Revolution, the sequel series to Revelation. I liked it, not as much as Revelation. Revelation was 10 episodes. It was 2 5-parters. Revolution seemed like it was only 5 episodes, period. And it kind of felt that way. Felt a little short. A little rushed, but overall enjoyed the series and look forward. They are definitely teasing out the arrival of Adora/She-Ra to the series, amongst others. Sorry, spoiler alert. But it's 5 episodes. It's a quick watch because they are 30-minute episodes. Like it's like watching a Saturday morning cartoon. So you can wrap that up in an afternoon. It's pretty good stuff. That was the big thing. Kaiju Sunday with the Little O'Dowd continued with one of the worst Godzilla movies we've ever watched today. It was Godzilla versus Ghidorah. It was awful. It's awful. And it was one of the first ones that we've watched where Max did not allow you to watch the original Japanese with subtitles, which, guys, it makes a difference because the voiceover acting is so terrible that, you know, because they've got grown adults trying to do children voices. Like, it's just bad. But it was one of those that we enjoyed watching and making fun of. Godzilla versus Ghidorah is famous for, or maybe even infamous for, the Godzilla dropkick. For those who know, you know. For those who don't know, look it up. Godzilla dropkick. It's something special. And what else? Oh, Quantum Leap came back. So I started watching the second half of season 2 of Quantum Leap, as well as the second season of Night Court, which has been less good than the first season. They made some casting changes, took out a key storyline point, and just never acknowledged that the character was gone. They were just gone, and which is what sitcoms do. I know the show itself is still getting good ratings, strong enough that they're putting other shows behind it to blend it, but it is going through a little bit of a sophomore slump, in my opinion. But that's what I've been watching. So, all right, folks, hour and a half, Bandwagon Nerds, a little bit of tight. The Grammys are on tonight. Might check out the Grammys, learn about an artist I've never heard of, fall in love with them for like 5 minutes, and then make Dave talk about it this summer when we do musical chairs. It'll be great. But other than that, we'll have to see what's up. Remember, we'll have a little bit of a surprise for you as to where we're going with next week's episode. Before we get out of here, fellas, why don't we do a quick once around? Tell everybody where they can find you on the socials and on the Chair Shot Radio Network. This week, we will go to my lower right with PC Tunney.
I would just say continue to listen to everything Chair Shot Radio Network. You're here right now listening to the entertainment side. We also have a sports side and, of course, a wrestling side. And that one's kind of blowing up right now. So thechairshot.com, prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot, and Chair Shot Radio Network on all of your favorite streaming platforms.
David Ungar.
Oh, you can find me on the platform we affectionately call Twix, at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression. Instagram and Threads at Attitude of Aggression, all one word. And getting back to normal, if you have hate tweets and you hate what we have said today, send your tweets to at It's Me DPP. Why, Tunney?
Yeah, fuck that guy. He should have been here today.
Exactly.
You know what? I think he's ducking me.
He kind of admitted that.
Next week, we'll ring the fucking bell. You guys go at it. It's going to be great. People are going to eat that shit up.
Ding, ding, to quote Apollo Creed.
Oh, I see what you did there. Look at that. Look at that. We have just dropped all of the Carl Weathers quotes. You can, of course, find me on the social medias at Wrestling Realist. That is at WRESTLNGREALIST. That's X Twitter. That's Threads. That's Instagram. Well, I'm there. I sort of post on Instagram, but not really. Really follow me on X Twitter. That's my game. Make sure you follow the show at Bandwagon Nerds, also on the Twitter. Maybe this week's poll is your favorite Carl Weathers movie or Carl Weathers role. That sounds like a good poll. Dave, do that. You're our social media manager.
I'm on it.
I love how Dave just rolled with Patrick's... it. Tony's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I got a new nickname for Patrick. He's not only the number one chair shot villain, he can continue that. Patrick O'Dowd, the delegator.
I work in a supervisory capacity, so it's what I do.
That's a secret. Really, really delegation well. Of authority, right?
So be on the lookout for that poll and tell us who you think, or what role you think was the greatest Carl Weathers role, coming soon on the Bandwagon Nerds Twitter feed, X Twitter feed. We'll get it up. It'll be plenty of time. All right. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Now get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and watch a Carl Weathers flick. There's tons of good ones out there. He's a hell of an actor, and he deserves to be loved. You have been listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chair Shot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
We're gonna scream until we're I know, but this is extremely crazy.
Yeah, it's mentally irregular, right?
Yeah.
But it makes all the sense in the world. You owe me a favor.
I know, but what'd you think of this?
About 3 years ago.
Oh, it's a very crazy bottle.
Look, Stallion. Now look, when you run that last fight, you won by 1 second. You beat me by 1 second, 1 second. That's very hard for a man of my intelligence to handle.
Oh, is it? But didn't you say after I beat you, you learned how to live with it?
I lied.
Oh, you lied. Oh, so now you just gotta prove it to yourself,
just
right?
Just myself. No TV, no newspapers, just you and me.
Nothing, just you and me. Asian for beauty.
Anything you say, Stallion.
I do all the work, okay. I'll tell you, Bob, better go slow because you ain't as young as springtime no more.
I'm still young enough to whip your butt, Stallion.
Oh, yeah? Well, how are you gonna do that? You taught me everything you know.
Almost everything. You gotta remember now. You fight great, but I'm a great fighter. Huh? You ready?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. You know, Stallion, it's too bad we gotta get over it, huh?
Just keep punching, Apollo. Wanna ring the bell?
All right. Ding, ding. Come on, Stallion. Come on, come on.
Boy, you really look good for an older guy.
Oh, you're looking good, Stallion. That taught you well.
I think you taught me too good. Look at him fly.
Look out now. No, you don't want any of this. Come on, come on.
Maybe I'm in here with the wrong guy.
Come on, watch yourself. Ready?
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.